Welcome to Bengals Scribe Session, presented by JosephOtto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, your Bengals beat writers Paul Daner Jr. and Richard Skinner escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily. All with the sidecar of snark and absurdity you've come to expect. Let's go. We're about to start a party in here. He's made strums and guitar in here. Looks like we got a good crowd in here. Turn it up to 10 and get lively.
Ball is out. The Bengals have scooped it up. Terrence Newman running back to the 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Up in the air. AJ Green makes the catch.
Oh man!
A deflected ball winds up in the hands of AJ Green and the clock hits zero.
It's about to get rowdy here, but if you want to fight, get out of here. We about to tear.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. Paul Daner Jr. here with you, Bengals beat writer Richard Skinner, my Bengals beat writer as well. How are we doing?
It's a long weekend for both of us.
We really, I shouldn't even ask how we're doing. I know.
Not to bore people, but I will for just a second.
No, let's bore people right off the top so people know we're going to give a quick, boring session.
For me, going up to New England, I had some personal things to do on Saturday. I didn't leave until Sunday morning, and I caught a 7 o'clock flight up. So I woke up at 4:30 in the morning on Sunday morning.
No sleep stories are the best.
I did not sleep until I got on the plane going from Boston to Washington, D.C. at 7 in the morning the next day. That's always really good sleep, right?
It's quality.
Slept a good 30 minutes there, probably drooled some, might have snored some. That part I don't know. I didn't have anybody looking at me like I was nuts when I woke back up. And then did not go to sleep until last night when I got home. I had dinner. I watched the first quarter of Monday Night Football. Gone.
Gone.
That was it. Next thing I remember, it's 5:30 this morning when I woke back up again.
Yeah. I think all of us that went up to New England to cover that game have a story of something like this. It's just a logistical nightmare no matter how you are slicing it, trying to do this.
Well, and then we came back, got back about noon yesterday, just enough time to kind of unpack, lay down for about 30 minutes, take a shower, shave, go back down to Paul Brown Stadium. And between you, me, and Coley Harvey, because Jeff Hobson, lucky for him, he works for Bengals.com, so he got a chance to at least hop the team plane and get home in a fairly reasonable
hour. Because they leave
hour.
Immediately after the
Correct.
Game on a bus and then get on a charter
Correct.
Flight.
He was no worse for the wear either. I mean, he looked very, very tired. But you, Coley, and I, it was about 6:30 last night, and we were tapping out our tomes, and literally, I think all three of us at the same time, absolutely hit the brick wall.
It wouldn't even, like, you could, it was to the point that you're so tired, drinking coffee doesn't have an effect. That's why I thought maybe I'll just pour the coffee on my face.
Scold myself, the pain will help me get through this.
The pain will help me get through and have enough energy to finish writing the story. I mean, it's like this every year. Anytime there's a road night game with the press conference the next day, it's always going to be awful.
Yep.
You just come to terms with it when you sign on the dotted line to do this beat. These are the days you're going to despise.
I'm still a little tired today, but I feel so much better that even though I'm a little tired, I feel like a new human being,
Yeah, we're ready to go. So you're technically kind of getting a re-energized
Scribe
session. Yes, you
are. That's why we're sorry we're probably getting this up a little bit late. We normally do this on Monday night.
You didn't want to hear it.
This is what it would have sounded like last night. Paul, I think I'm going to sleep.
No, you just would have heard. You just would have heard a face down.
Just down.
Yeah, and there'd be 30 minutes of just snoring and sleeping until one of us comes to and says, "All right, what's our song to get out of here tonight?"
Exactly. Basically, speaking of face down, that's kind of what the defense was, right?
Yeah, I guess smooth transition is what it was for you. No, let's run down kind of what we're gonna talk about here over the next hour. We have to start talking about from the fallout, which is significant from Patriots 43, Bengals 17. You have defensive issues galore. They're just a completely exposed group after 3 weeks looking at the most dominant defensive football. The Patriots may have laid a blueprint. We'll get into that. We'll talk about AJ Green in big games, which is something that I mentioned before the season started with a lot of people, and people would get indignant with me anytime I brought, because it's You don't say that about the special one, you know? You don't rip on A.J. Green. You don't say anything. And not that anybody's here to rip on him, but it's a legitimate...
He is a special player.
He's a special player. The things he does are incredible. But the fact is he has gotten a pass in many ways in regarding the Bengals' big game struggles, while Andy Dalton's taken all of it. We'll get into that more. We will talk about the... near the futures, I guess, of Brandon Tate, Jermaine Gresham, and Mike Nugent, all which were discussed in one form or another this week, most with a expletive before them by fans who were just hammering my Twitter feed. And, you know, we'll talk about – actually, we'll talk about you guys a little bit. We'll talk about the fans and the quote-unquote bandwagon jumpers, or maybe bridge jumpers, I don't know, judging by what we've seen. One loss always brings this out of people. And then we'll discuss a little bit the fantasy game that Skinny and I have had going on all year, and came to a
thud for you is what came
to a thud. But that's all right, because new hope is on the horizon, because we break it down into four segments and we'll have a redraft for next week. So I badly need a redraft. But we'll discuss the Bengals players' fantasy values for all our favorite fantasy football players out there. And we've got some sound from a few people as well that you're going to hear from, including defensive coordinator Paul Gunther. You'll hear from A.J. Green, and you'll hear from the fearless leader Marvin Lewis, who's just really doesn't want to hear our questions about player personnel.
The one thing, though, that I'm going to give him some credit for yesterday, I think I was the one that asked the last one where I tried to prod him a little bit, and he finally said, look, I'm not going to say anything, guys.
I mean,
it was at least a mea culpa of, hey, you're not getting anything out of me. You can keep trying all you want. I'm just not going to provide the answers you want. And then, of course, you got the great chuckle.
Yeah, of course. The chuckle is priceless. We'll get to all that a little bit. So that's our agenda. The slate is set now, Skinny, so now we attack.
All right, let's go.
That's how we do it. All right, so let's start.
Unlike
here.
The Bengals defense.
who did not attack.
No.
In the least. Here's the thing, is I think you had 3 weeks in a row where everything sort of fell into place, and we started to say, well, there were some issues in that Tennessee game, but because Jake Locker and the Titans were so bad, and the Bengals got up early, it really didn't matter. And the truth be told, one comment that was made by whoever it was, Delanie Walker for Tennessee, said no team had really smacked the Bengals in the face and taken the lead, and they planned on doing that. After all, the Bengals only traveled for 48 seconds all year. They obviously did not. New England clearly had the same idea, and that created sort of this perfect storm of Belichick and Brady sitting in the bunker all week, just steaming as the Boston media and everybody across the country challenged them and that they're any good, coupled with the need to really just take the Bengals by the throat like no team really had. And boy, did they ever. The first quarter, you could have turned the TV off after the first quarter and known exactly what had already happened. It was over.
Just watching it in person, did it not seem like New England was at just a different speed that first quarter? It was almost like, because I was writing a story for halftime just because of the way our deadline was. It just felt like I couldn't even catch my breath for what New England was doing and how fast they were doing. I would literally tweet out something, look up, and they were snapping the ball. They were so fast that first quarter that not only could we not keep up, the Bengals couldn't keep up either.
And it was clearly their plan. They talked about it afterwards, to come out and just blitz, not literally but figuratively, blitz this team and take the fight to them. And unlike other teams that don't have the ability to do that, Tom Brady does.
No question.
When you saw the emotion out of him when they drove down for that first touchdown, you knew that the Bengals had their hands full. And we've seen plenty of games like that before where teams will come out with a lot of energy, throw the first punch, but then eventually the game begins to play out.
And this one did a little bit.
But then New England threw the second punch, and that was really the difference, was when it was 20-10 and the Bengals finally looked like they were starting to get it together and come back. It was just right down the field.
86 yards.
It was run, 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 and then tight ends, and it was over.
Yep.
And that was really the clear apparent plan was the Patriots said this. Yeah, our receivers stink. Your corners are really good. So we are not going to even attempt to go after them. We are going to run the ball at you, which you haven't really necessarily shown the ability to stop without Vontaze Burfict in the game. And we're going to go to our tight ends because our tight ends are good and your linebackers can't cover. And, boy, did that ever play itself out. to be the easiest way to expose this defense.
Yeah, Rob Gronkowski and Tim Wright combined for 11 for 185.
Wow.
And here's what the receivers did. Julian Edelman, 5 for 35, pedestrian. Brandon LaFell, 1 for 20. That was a big 20-yard play. That was actually to the outside. Aaron Dobson, 1 for 16, and Danny Amendola, 1 for 7. That's their outside guys. Why would they really try?
There was no reason.
No, exactly.
It was a game where they were going to line up, tell their embattled offensive line to run block, and have plays that were quick hits to tight ends that they could find ways to get open, and they did.
Here's the scary part, and again, it's one game, and that's where it is easy to go over the skis, but we were picking a little bit before this. We were picking nits a little bit with pass rush, lack of pass rush, all that. Was Emmanuel Lemieux exposed in this game?
Absolutely.
Exposed in a long-term sense of, oh, boy, is he able to do it?
I don't know about that, because the three games prior, he had played pretty well and acquitted himself pretty well.
Walker did okay, though. Again, he's kind of the tight end guy.
But I will say this. I feel like the Patriots made it their game plan after 59.
Absolutely.
They ran at him. They threw at him. They made all the decisions be put right on him. A guy, and smart by them, that no team had really quite
done. NFL games. He's played three NFL games going into Sunday night.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, you're talking as far as a starter who was a main part. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so smart by them to do. They also went after Ray Maluga, which everyone has done.
Right.
But, I mean, I think that opens up something you have to, and there's a lot on his plate. Emmanuel Limmer, who has the headset, he's making the calls, he's doing
all
those things.
That's usually Vontaze Burfict's job, by the way.
Who's Vontaze Burfict's job?
It should be Ray Maluga's job because he's the middle guy, but again,
he doesn't play in the nickel.
Right, and that's the problem. Lemieux plays the whole time.
He's in there the whole time.
Usually Burfict is, too.
Vinny Ray would be the other guy. There's some formations that he's not in there for. So Lemieux is the only guy who's pretty much the guy without Burfict in the game. And, you know, again, you're putting even more on Emmanuel Lemieux.
And especially as fast as they were going. I mean, you're trying to get the play calling as fast as possible. This kid's head's ringing. He's trying to communicate with everybody else. Part of what they did, they couldn't get lined up half the time. And that sounds so simple.
And that was part of the Lemieux situation.
Right. Fans hear that and they think, well, couldn't the Bengals coach him better than that? Some of that was really dictated by Noe. They were playing at such a fast pace, with Lemieux having to make the calls, with him not being able to communicate it quickly
and doing
enough.
Some different things that you have to be able to adjust to on the fly.
Correct.
That maybe were practiced, but it's got to be
the
instant recall.
Yeah.
And that was where, and really this is probably the bigger point that we need to get to, is how badly they miss Vontaze Burfict in that particular game when there is so much mind game happening and so much just quick tempo mind games and attacking of the linebackers going on. That was a team that missed their leader.
And physically as well. I mean, physically, physical presence. But aside
missing
from
tackles,
that, aside from his physical presence, there may be times with him in the game that Paulie G doesn't even have to say anything in his headset. That you just let him go in the moment, let him make the quick calls on the field, let him get everybody lined up, and then maybe between series say, okay, let's do this differently the next time. That's one way when a team's up-tempo as a coordinator. You don't have to worry about making a call every time. If you got somebody on the field like that, he knows what he's doing. Let him go. Maybe on occasion, you know, it's an incomplete pass, a penalty, something along those lines where it's going to take a second to get set. Maybe then you can get in his headset and say, all right, let's do the blip, 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 and then he goes and runs with it. Lemieux is not capable of doing that yet.
Yeah, no, it was apparent that they missed him, and they've got to find ways. You know, there's no saying that Vontaze Burfict is going to be healthy all year, and even if he does come back from a concussion next week,
right?
Which is unknown. We honestly don't know these concussion situations. They are, as Marvin Lewis would say, nebulous. Nobody really knows, especially when you had 2 in 7 days, but. They have to find ways to win without him. I mean, the thing is, this defense is so centered around him. He's the quarterback. He is the absolute quarterback. He's the equivalent of Andy Dalton on the defense to 100%. Maybe more so because the drop off appears to be deeper,
much deeper
rather than it would be from Dalton even to Campbell. So that is going to be a thing that they have to figure out right now because other teams are going to try to do exactly what New England just did. We'll see if they can't. So now I want to bring in Paulie. We talked with Paul Gunther the other day. It was myself, Jeff Hobson, Dave Lapham, and Coley Harvey from ESPN. And we were just talking a little bit about what had happened, you know, and as he told us in the very beginning, Mama said there'd be days like this, and I don't think he thought they would come this soon. And I don't think he thought that it would look like that. But this is a lot into what happened against New England and sort of his mindset for this defense and maybe how ways to deal with those issues going forward. So here is some time with Paul Gunther, defensive coordinator of Cincinnati Bengals.
The bottom line of the game is they, you know, our plan was to come out knowing that they came off a tough game on Monday night. We knew we were going to get their best shot. You know, we had to come out, and you know, I told the players we had to come out with early energy, and they did it to us. They punched us in the face first, and you know, we never responded like we should have.
And that first drive, eight rushes out of the 10 plays, a lot of it was right between the tackles, mm-hmm. just coming right downhill. Mm-hmm. And it looked to me like guys were they violent enough with their hands getting off blocks and stuff?
I mean. I think, you know, they were a little up-tempo. We had some things ready for that. I don't think we handled it as good as we should have. Some of that, you know, probably we could have given them more in practice, but they were up on the ball a lot. So we had some automatic calls that we wanted to get to, and we just didn't handle it like we should have.
How does that situation work? Because like you guys were saying, a lot of times they didn't know the plays were going before they were up or on the calls. Is that their communication with each other, or is that you coming from the sideline?
Mostly it's them setting the defense wherever it is quickly enough.
That's where Vontaze Burfict is invaluable. You miss Vontaze Burfict big time.
Well, obviously, he's the veteran.
He's the quarterback.
He's our quarterback, yes, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, we had some guys in there that were, you know, guys have been around here should know, but guys have been kind of new in the roles of what they were doing. So certainly when you don't have a guy like that, in these type of games, it's valuable to have those kind of guys.
I mean, E-Man was fine against Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Guys were raving about how well he did. Was mm-hmm. it just the
fine against tempo? Everybody so far?
Yeah. Was it just the ump tempo that?
Well, you know, I think he, you know, quite frankly, I think he had some plays in the beginning of the game that were kind of his responsibility. That he, you know,
they went after him, didn't they?
And so he got a little flustered a little bit, I think, but. You know, I think he responded pretty good, and you know, it's just something we need to work on as we go.
What was the factor too when Porter goes down on the first play? Now Vinny's got to play team.
Yeah, Vinny's, you know, and then Vinny's on all the special teams. So you know, towards the end of the game, he was playing all the special teams and a lot of linebackers. So, so that you know, that became a little bit of an issue here with his gas. You know,
with the tight ends. In the middle of the football field like that, I mean, the play action, obviously, the running game's going so well, there's going to be a cushion between linebacker and safety, but was there something that was there from an assignment standpoint or not really?
No, it was a number of guys. I mean, depending on the coverage, you know, we weren't exact in things we needed to be exact on, quite frankly, and it was just one of those days. We had an off night. I mean, that's all I can tell you is we had an off night. I'm responsible for it, and I'll get it fixed. It won't happen again. I mean, our guys, you know, I told them, that, you know, if things go bad, it's, you know, it's Tom Brady. He's going to make some plays on you. It's how we respond when they make those plays. And I don't think we responded like we should have.
You kind of talk about responding. There was a few plays when they hit something on you. Seeing guys, your guys
chirping
at each other, you know, and lots of this type of stuff. Is that kind of okay? I mean, it's just, is that kind of stuff you're talking about?
Yeah, it's not okay. Yeah. No, it isn't. No, that's something I'm talking about right there. You know, we're a close unit here, and you know, there's going to be guys that make mistakes at times, and we got to pick each other up when those things happen. We can't point fingers or do any of that stuff. And you know, I think our guys understand that.
Did anybody play well?
Yeah, I thought a couple guys played well. I thought Terrence Newman played pretty good.
Good run support.
Yeah, I thought Wallace played hard. Robert Gathers played hard. You know, so there were some good things on the tape. Like I said, I mean, we gave up six runs for 112 yards, and two of them were on third and long. I mean, situational football. But, you know, the other 40, they had 108 yards. So, you know, we just got to clean up some of the play action stuff and you know, depending on the coverage. And we'll continue to work on that this week.
Knowing the mismatches you had up front, were you surprised you weren't able to get home on time more?
Well, I think you know, their plan going in was to not get them in situations where they were going to get hit. Mm-hmm. You know, you could see, you know, the third and longs were runs, some screens in there, and stuff we anticipated. Mm-hmm. You know, they weren't going to hang them out to dry. They looked at our tape. They understand how we attack. Mm-hmm. So you know, I thought they had a good plan, and you know, we didn't execute our plan, basically.
A lot there to digest, Skinny. I mean, a lot there to digest when you talk about Paul Gunther's comments, and I think, you know, you've got to look at what he said and say, hey, move it forward, guys. You've got to have the same on to Carolina that Bill Belichick had on to Cincinnati, on to Carolina, and put that behind you. It's just a bad day. That's the way he has to look at it. They just had a bad day. Everything sort of snowballed, and you know, they lost their cool a little bit.
You talked about it earlier. I mean, it was a perfect storm. You know, it was an absolute perfect storm. The emotion of the night, the way Brady threw it, the way Brady was – he probably spent extra preparation time knowing him that it was going to say, you know what? Hey, he's kind of robotic, but he also can be, as you saw, he can have some emotion. It was just one of the, and that's how you have to chalk it up. It's one of those nights. Yes, there are some issues, but you would hope that, hey, you're not going to face a perfect storm like that again. You go back to doing what you do. The one thing is, this defense plays well from ahead. We need to see what it does when it plays in a tight game and has to do a lot of different things.
Yeah, they were faced with adversity for the first time this season.
And didn't react well.
And didn't react, and to me, that was where I grew most concerned. You heard me asking Gunther about that on the audio. Was it wasn't just that they were in adverse situations; it was that they started pointing fingers at each other on the field
very quickly.
And I mean, after the first touchdown, you see Ray Maluga, before the guy is even in the end zone, almost turning to Emmanuel Lemieux and waving his arms at him for missing the assignment, which he did, but that doesn't matter. You don't do that.
Reggie Nelson did the same thing on what was really a key play, that key draw play in that 86-yard drive that literally you're going to hold them to a field goal. It's going to be 23-10 at worst. You're going to get the ball back and, you know, make it a one-score game possibly.
Yeah.
He took a horrible, 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 horrible – did I say horrible?
Yeah, it was
angle.
Horrible.
I mean, it was just – anybody that's played football up to fifth grade could see how bad of an angle the guy took on the play. And Reggie let him have it.
Yeah.
Now, that's a circumstance where I don't mind a veteran getting in a kid's face, but that time, that place, and that circumstance on that night was probably not it. Maybe on the sideline, yell at him, maybe even in the huddle, but boy, he made it very, very public gesture in that regard.
Yeah, and you saw a few of those. And I'm sorry, that rattles a guy.
No question. He's already having a bad night.
He's already having a bad night. Now his teammates are turning on him on national television, and that's not – it's just not how you play winning football over the course of a season. It's how you divide a locker room, is what you do, and that's what, like Gunther said, it's not okay to do that.
Right.
Now,
and good for him for addressing it, because there are some coaches that would have just let that play itself out, I believe, and said, look, they're veterans, I'm going to let them kind of ride herd, and sometimes that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But in this circumstance, I think the coach steps in and says, look, we're not going to have any of that stuff, fellas. We're just not.
You don't make a guy look bad like that. You got to coach him. You got to talk to him. Maybe you got to yell at him a little bit. That's fine. But doing it like that, but when the play isn't even over yet, in Maluga's case, that set the tone for the entire night. I mean, for Emmanuel Lemieux's night. I mean, have you ever had a situation like that where just something happens right at the beginning of a day, or even a show, where somebody maybe says something to you or feel like they embarrassed you, and it's in your head the rest of the day? And you just can't shake it. Like, if I'd have just called you out for being an ugly old man right at the beginning of this show,
I'm done. I quit.
You quit. You're out of here. Or maybe it's in.
So apparently, it's in the back of your mind now that I am an ugly old man. So,
well, I just had to think of something right off the top of my head, and I was looking at your face.
Sure, and it was right at the top of your head. So yeah.
So it's one of those things where, but that you can't tell me that isn't in your head the rest of the rest of the day. And when you have a guy who looked just lost out there for the most part. That definitely plays a role. I thought that was real weak on Maluga's part, and you know, just another part of his issues that he has.
the other one is he can't play very well.
Yeah. So let's move it forward here. I want to talk about AJ Green. I don't know, Skinny. I talked about this before the season started, and about when everyone was just hammering Andy Dalton in the playoff scenario, and rightfully so. His numbers are atrocious. He's played atrocious. He deserves the heat. But I pointed out that AJ Green was always the perfect son. Okay, you know, if Andy Dalton is your son who is out robbing 7-Elevens and kicking puppies and stabbing grandmas, AJ Green is the one who spent all that time helping the homeless.
Yep.
You know, in everybody's eyes, no matter what was really happening, because he's AJ Green, because he has amazing things, and he's a talent unlike this city has really. He's better than Chad Johnson was,
by miles.
And he's all of those things that are special, and there's reasons to admire his talent. But the bottom line is, if you're really looking at his performance in playoffs, prime time, big matchups, one like this where he's matched up on Revis Island all night long, he has continually not gotten it done.
I agree. I'm going to give you a caveat to this, though.
What's your caveat?
Well, you're playing better teams in those circumstances, number one.
Yeah.
And those better teams are going to absolutely scheme to get you out of the mix. And then hear me out. Then they've got enough good players around that when bad teams decide they want to try to take AJ Green away, they don't have enough to fix the rest of it. Okay, so then the rest of it looks bad. So then teams have to go back and say, all right, well, we're going to have to single him up sometimes. When good teams do that, the Bengals just simply, against good teams, don't have enough weapons to compensate for that. And I'm not telling you that he deserves a complete pass. Because, look, if you're an elite receiver, you need to get separation from every corner in this league. Every corner, I mean, you should be good enough to do that. And it's funny, you look at the raw numbers from the other night, 5 for 81. You extrapolate that, that's an 80-catch season for 1,400 yards. That's pretty good, really. But it didn't feel like 5 for 81.
It was mostly garbage.
I know
time.
It was. No,
when Revis went out.
And I'm not discounting what you're saying, because he has gotten a pass, and at times where he doesn't deserve one. I mean, last year I thought in the San Diego game he was terrible.
Yeah.
In fact, he dogged it to some degree. It was almost like he got depressed and pissed and just decided.
And his drop was a critical
drop. Absolutely.
A critical drop.
Absolutely.
And you're right.
But
though,
I didn't think Sunday
he was overthrown. He was thrown out of bounds to a point early in the game where he didn't even have a chance to go and try and make a play against Reeves, where maybe he did have a half a step. But I just feel like people immediately just say, well, AJ Green is what they need to do. They just need to go to me, and if you go to him, the answers will be there. Well, in these type of situations, we haven't necessarily seen that from him, and his fumble was just the latest.
And it came into horror. I mean, you've got to, and that certainly has ball security over anything else.
And how you let a guy just rip the ball out you is fairly beyond me. The other interesting element of it is this, and we may be reading between the lines here a little bit, but I want to bring in AJ Green after the game, the conversation that we had with him. Talking about how the night went with Darrell Revis after, I think anybody that watched it just saw Darrell Revis pretty much shut him down. So here's AJ Green talking about the night and his view of his battle with Darrell Revis.
It's frustrating, but you can't let it get you. You know, we play up and down sports. You can't go out there and be perfect every night. But our night's just not prime time night. But we got to correct it. We want to be that great team. You know, we got to be able to play on big stages. And I don't think that's the problem. Just tough luck right now. So,
on the fumble, did you think you had it squared away?
I thought I had it. I was just trying to fight, but he had my legs and just.
It looked like he punched it.
Yeah, pushed it out. So.
It looked like you had to step on him a couple times.
Yeah.
Ball to get there.
Yeah, you know, I had to step on him most of the night. But you know, it happened like that. It's not just me. We wasn't connecting it. We never got in a rhythm to be hitting big plays like that. You know, throwing deep balls is all about getting in that rhythm, and we never had that rhythm.
Because when Revis got out, you guys went right to
the 26. It don't matter if he was in there or not. The ball was still coming to me no matter what.
How do you think he did on
Revis? He did good job, but I feel like he didn't shut me down. You know, I had steps on him. Even the one when he interception, I felt like I had a step on him, but he made a great play. You know, he's a great corner. But, you know, I didn't feel like he did anything special that I'd never seen before.
He didn't think he shut him down. He said, he thought he had a step on him. It sort of inferred, I thought, that
Andy didn't give him the ball.
Andy didn't give him the ball even though he was open or didn't look at him, or the ones when he did have a step were bad
Andy,
throws.
I thought, in fact, you and I sitting next to each other, I thought it was a couple times he forced the ball to AJ when he shouldn't have.
Yeah.
You know, the one interception, I had somebody and I went back and forth on Twitter until I got done with it, arguing about whose fault that first interception was. And he said, well, Revis made a great play. He didn't have as well covered as you wrote it. You know, Andy underthrew him. As soon as he threw the ball, I thought, well, why are you even throwing that pass for starters? Yeah. I thought it was just a bad decision from the get-go.
Well, he saw the matchups. He saw one-on-one with A.J. Green, which means the ball's going up there pretty much every time. And he just wasn't really getting open in those. I mean, he wasn't winning those all the time. I mean, even the one that he does win, the ball gets ripped away.
Right.
And by that point, Revis leaves, and guess what? They went right after him, and A.J. found a way to score a touchdown. And that's all fine and good. And I'm not saying A.J. Green's the problem here.
No, I know you're not. But
at all.
Your point is well taken.
It let's be fair to everyone in the room. If the big games are about the big players making big plays, as Steve Smith will tell you.
It hasn't happened.
A.J. Green in Baltimore.
But that doesn't compare to a primetime game or a playoff game.
Right.
It was a nice – hey, look, the guys – neither one of us are saying the guy's not capable of making big plays. That's foolish
talk.
We're
saying in these
moments.
When we've talked about, which we've spent all week exposing the 1-11 in primetime.
Right.
And 0-3 in the playoffs. In those games – A.J. Green has not had big games, just as well as Andy Dalton has not had big games. A lot of them go together, certainly. I mean, you can't say one without the other. However, let's also put both of them in the crosshairs a little bit if you're going to do that.
Yeah, I thought Andy's decision making the other night was not bad. I didn't think the only one he forced to me were a couple throws to A.J. Green. To be quite honest,
I thought all things considered, if you'd have told me that Andy Dalton was not going to throw any interceptions, would throw a couple touchdown passes, you know, whatever he was, 15 to 24 for 200 yards. Passer rating was 117, I believe.
Right, which is...
And that's fine. Those are numbers, and there were some throws he missed.
Yeah, well, there was
but
a
he's
guys
not going to be perfect.
And he had Jermaine Gresham drop a touchdown. He had Gresham drop another ball. I mean,
yeah,
so
I mean,
throw those
Sanu
back
dropped
in the mix.
A pass. I mean, if you count that, I say if all the people that I'm putting on the line here. For
Andy's way down the chart.
Maybe 53.
Yeah, right.
I mean, to be honest, I don't think that you can really blame him. There were obviously a few throws that he needed to have back and be better, but, I mean, I thought if you're looking at silver lining, and it's a single ray way off in the distance, it's that Dalton played fairly.
He didn't crap his pants in primetime like he's done in the playoffs.
Like he has, like he's done in primetime as well.
Right.
I mean, you know, and this was against Belichick, a very good Bill Belichick defense, with a lot of bad things happening around him.
No question.
With a lot of people letting him down, he stayed in it and played fairly well all game. I thought, and I mean, you can't blame the loss on him if you're looking for silver linings, and probably you're not. So let's move it forward anymore. Okay, here we go. What do you think, Skinny? Let's talk a little bit about Brandon Tate. Oh, wait, hold on. I think everyone listening just drove off the road.
No, they didn't drive. They're gnashing their teeth right now going, just try to say something nice.
It's just unbelievable. And I'm not saying a lot of it isn't warranted. How much people hate him. God, I mean,
and he's a very likable guy. He's a milk toast.
Yeah, he doesn't say
much.
Yeah, I mean, he's a quiet,
earnest guy. Seems like he's a trier. Which again, that this is not Boy Scouts or kickball in the schoolyard. This
but
is professional
God,
football.
People hate him. They
just they just
hate
don't
him.
See him as a dynamic player.
And they see Adam Jones right next to him,
correct,
which is completely
correct,
unfair to him.
Correct. It's funny. If I were to ask any Bengal fan, I always call it the Fountain Square. We used to call this back in the radio day, the Fountain Square 50. If you were to go ask 50 people on Fountain Square this question, what answer would you get? If I were to go up to Fountain Square and ask 50 people, who is the Bengals' all-time leading kickoff return average guy?
Yeah.
How many of them would guess Brandon Tate?
Yeah. They would say, I better not be Brandon Tate is all they would say.
Yeah, maybe. So, and again, I know it's different eras and all that. I mean, it's hard to compare a lot of this, but he still is their all-time leading kickoff returner for average.
Yeah, for
which
average.
People wouldn't believe that. They just have a hard time buying that.
No.
But, you know, in a big stage circumstance for him, he was just dreadful on Sunday night.
He was
not just the fumble, some of the decision-making he had as well.
He was – I ran through the numbers of every kick that he's taken out, which actually that this was the first game he's really brought kicks out.
He
had one technically before that. The other one was off a after a safety where it was
correct.
Basically
he's
a punt.
He had literally two kickoff returns going into this game is all
yeah,
he had to
and so and one came from 3 yards deep.
Which now, is a returnable ball.
Which is a returnable ball. In this game – you had five of the six, I believe five of them.
Four of them were 6 yards deep, I believe, and
one
was
five yards deep. That's where Gostkowski was kicking it.
Yep.
And that those are apparently bring it out.
Yep.
That's what we learned. So before we bury Brandon Tate, the blocking was atrocious.
It was terrible.
And he should not be getting contacted behind the nine. And people say, why is he running sideways? He's running that way because that's the direction the play is supposed to go. I would contend if you're catching the ball knowing you're going to have to go all the way across over there and you're 6 yards deep, that's when you need to fair
catch.
Yeah,
if you're catching it the two and that's where it comes, I mean, you're obviously in the field of play.
But
you
I
have
would
to
say,
go anyway. But
I would say probably half of those I will don't have a huge problem with him bringing out. Have a problem with the protection.
And obviously, if you see, you know, they obviously probably saw something on film that suggested – you know, don't go up the initial seam. Don't cut it short side. That hey, their backside protection is horrible. Maybe they've been out of their proverbial lanes a bunch. And you saw, hey, the two guys on the one side are always pinched way too far in. We got a chance to hit this big if you can get to a certain spot, and let's run it that way. If we block it up properly, he's going to get to the corner and be gone. That didn't happen. So that part is not on Brandon Tate. You're right.
And then the fumble is.
It's on him.
And it's on him, and that's the one that will make people think. And here
well, because it eliminate whatever sliver of hope you had that they were gonna make a game of this.
That was it.
That was click. Good night, honey.
Good night. It was all good. Now everyone else at home can go get some sleep and not bother themselves with the end of that game. And I still thought the Bengals had a chance at that point.
It was 27-10 at that point.
It wasn't over.
No, and you had just scored. Actually, the last time the offense
they were,
had the ball,
the offense was really moving the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
But that just took all it took. It took everything out of you. Here's the interesting thing about Brandon Tate. Before I do this, I want to get to the interesting quote, which is from Marvin Lewis when Dan Hoard asked him specifically about Brandon Tate, who it was his birthday. He obviously was
go
cut.
Shorty.
He was it's cut. He was cut by Cuban. You're bringing back 50.
I am just for you.
50 Skinner. So you have that threw me off.
Sorry.
It's delightful. It just threw me off. You have it was his birthday. It was his birthday. He got cut by New England. He looked like a player that showed up feeling like this is gonna be my night to show the world.
And you know what? Right now, people are saying we don't give a. It's not your birthday.
Exactly right. So that was sort of Dan Hoard's point. Did you feel like he was kind of pressing or going? And the response from Marvin Lewis was one that, well, fans will just love. Here's Marvin Lewis.
Brandon did not have a good night. It was his former team. It was his birthday. Was he trying to do too much?
Do too much how?
Making some questionable decisions on returns.
No, come on, man. When he runs across the field, the return is designed to go across the field, okay? And secondly, he made good decisions on returns. He has, coached very well on when we want him to bring the ball out and when not to, and based on the hang and so forth in the situation. So he actually made pretty good decisions last night. So Brandon's not blocking the guys. We got to get the guys blocked as well, so. But he's got to hold on to the ball. I mean, again, end of the day, we can't have a fumble.
Yeah, I thought he made great decisions. But it's not just that. It's the laughing about the idea that he didn't make good decisions. It's the come on, man.
In defense of what Marvin said a little bit, just to be fair, if they had predetermined that if you do catch it in a certain spot, as he said, if come on out, go ahead and bring it on out. That's been predetermined. That isn't on him in that regard. So I think that's what Marvin's trying to point out. But you're not gonna sage the fans in that regard. They don't want to hear that because he just was not very good.
Come on, man.
Well, never mind in the punt return game. And you asked that question.
I felt like it's just I've heard this debate for however many years I've been on this beat now, ever since Adam Jones and Brandon Tate have been on this team and they've used them in a rotation. And I understand both sides very clearly, and I get it. I mean, Adam Jones plays a lot on defense.
And people need to understand that part because there's a lot of truth to that.
And he's not going to fair catch it.
Never.
So that's concerning when you have a punt returner standing on his 10. There's Brandon Tate, if anything is reliable in that factor for the most part. I mean, he's going to catch the ball.
But you know what? Let me just say, I'm going to cut you off right there because you're right in what you say. And I'm just give you two numbers here. Adam Jones has had 5 punts that he's had a chance to return this year. How many fair catches? Answer the question. You know the answer to it. Zero. Brandon Tate has touched it on 8 punts. How many of those 8 has he fair caught it?
7, right?
7 of the 8.
Yeah, 7. I mean, because he's in there in fair catch situations.
Okay, so let me ask you this then. And that's where I go back to, you can get just about anyone who's a wide receiver, DB, to fair catch a punt. You can get anybody just about to go back there.
Dane Sonsenbacher could do it.
Yes. That's,
can you, though? Or do you trust them, though?
If you told me that if my second punt returner, my non-Adam Jones punt returner was Dane Sonsenbacher, I would absolutely go for it. The guy, in 2 preseasons in a row, has returned a punt for a touchdown. I know this. When he's got a chance to get through a crease and go, he finds it. Brandon, just as a punt returner, I have problems with him. I just don't think he does anything in the punt return game other than catch the ball. You can find someone to catch the ball.
And the way they're not using Dane Sonsenbacher, even with Marvin Jones hurt, why do you have both of them?
Correct. Absolutely right. That's the legitimate part, because you would think that one of them would fill the third receiver.
And here's
on a regular
the interesting
basis.
Number that I wanted to bring
the James
up.
Wright number, right?
James Wright played more snaps.
I know.
Than Brandon Tate did on offense, and that's not because this game was blown out.
No, in fact, one of the passes Andy threw
was
on the side.
Early third down.
But all of us kind of were surprised when we looked up and went,
"It was James Wright."
James Wright.
Yeah. What? I mean, if you're telling me he's not even he better than James Wright as a receiver,
right,
who's a special teamer who didn't catch a ball at LSU last year, then now what are you telling me about Brandon Tate?
That he's not part of the receiving game whatsoever, and he shouldn't be. I mean, we've seen him enough, Paul. The one big catch he's got this year is the 50-yarder from Sanu, and it was a very good catch. I mean, it really was. It's on the sideline, tight. Can't do anything but tip my cap.
They run these end arounds to him, and it doesn't. They haven't broken one. He doesn't look dangerous with the ball.
Take the 50-yarder out of the mix for him. Do you know what he's done on his other 5 receptions?
Please fill me
24
in.
Yards.
24 yards.
That's
for a guy that's been playing a lot.
That's fullback-like. Yeah. That's dumping the flat fullback-like numbers.
And that's just for a guy who's in Marvin Jones' position.
Correct.
For the first 4 games.
Correct.
Boy, a guy they need back.
Yep, desperately.
I mean, it's – wow. So, all right. So I hope you all enjoyed that. You probably did, actually, because we kind of turned on Brandon Tate a little bit there.
Yes, we did.
But, I mean, it has to be said.
Yeah, well, just to put a bow on it, I defend him as a kickoff returner. I do not defend him as a punt returner.
Yeah, or an offensive weapon.
Or an offensive weapon.
Or a contribution to the team.
And therefore, when you cut to the chase of that, put Rex Burkhead back there, put Cedric Pierman back there, somebody else on kickoff returns, and tell Brandon Tate to go on with his life's work. There you go.
There it is.
There you go, fans. I appeased you.
Skinny's mad moment of the day. All right. Let's go into Mike Nugent real quick. He's missed 5 of his last 7 field goals. I broached that with Marvin Lewis. Here was Marvin Lewis's response to my question about Mike Nugent.
Will you consider looking into any kickers, or are you okay with Nugent right now?
Yeah, I'm fine with Mike. Mike had a good hit, you know. I mean, that ball got knocked down. It was incredible how it got knocked down right there. I mean, he hit the ball well, and if you see, you know, when you guys are getting your tape and you start looking at your tape, you'll see Hube giving, you know, high five because he knows it's a good hit. And but it got knocked down, and so that's I don't know, one of, you know, just one of those Ripley's gusts of wind that came up and knocked the ball down right at the end.
And I'm okay. I think I'm okay with this.
Yeah, I like Mike.
Yeah, well, I like him. I absolutely like Mike. Mike's a great guy.
He's a great guy.
But as far as evaluating kickers, there's a lot of good kickers out there.
Was it Sportsnet where they kept bringing up the guy? Can't kick. Yeah, but he's really good, but he can't kick.
Can't kick.
But, you know, he does a lot in the community. Can't kick.
Can't kick. at a certain point, you know, the run that he's on, you've got to be able to hit from 50, too. You do.
I'm
the gust of wind thing, Okay, I mean, he thought – I don't question his
– Gostkowski kicked in that gust of wind from 48 and drilled it from 48.
Now, I don't know I – mean, they. Nugent typically has plenty of leg from 52.
Paul, I do think, because when he hit that kick initially, and we were where our vantage point was actually in the end zone away from that end zone the kick was in, so we had literally a direct line on it.
I assumed it was good
because I thought plenty of leg. I mean, he's got the distance. The crowd behind it, too, usually you can see their reaction, too, right? They didn't react initially either because I think they thought it was good, and it literally did. It went right underneath the goalpost. I mean, he was that close, or the crossbar, rather. That's how close it was to doing it. When you take the five misses in just a vacuum by itself, it's terrible. Five misses in four NFL games is horrible. He's never missed more than five in an entire season as a Bengal. So that in itself. But, you know, 55 on a windy day, I'm going to give you a pass. 52 if the wind blew at the end. And I'm going to take Marvin's word on that because I think it did. I'm going to give him a pass. The block in Baltimore was clearly not his fault. He didn't kick it low. I mean, somebody, I can't remember who it was, it was actually Jeremy Miles, the former Bengal, got great penetration, so somebody did not block in that circumstance. There's three of them. He missed another one from 49. The one NFL kickers should never miss under 40 unless the wind is just absolutely howling crosswind into your whatever. That was just a plain miss. So to me, one miss is really, I'm going to pin on him, and that's the 38-yarder.
Yeah, and that's fair.
But it's a fair question, though, Paul.
It's a fair question.
Fair question to ask.
Yeah, and I would just
because you didn't even say, are you satisfied with him? You said, are you going to? I think it was.
Are you going to look at anybody else? Are you okay with Mike right now? And he says okay with Mike because there are good kickers out there. Matt Prater, who hit 25-26 in Denver last year, is available. He's getting a tryout from Detroit right pretty much as we speak. So, I mean,
may even be signed by Detroit by the time
post this. Yeah. So, I mean, there are guys out there. And I have to think that the leash at least has gotten much shorter. And so, I mean, if you have a couple more games like this, maybe we see what happens at that point. But I'm okay with Nuge. We have to double check on these things. Do we even need to go into Jermaine Gresham? I mean, anybody.
Well, I'm going to write a story about him this week, later in the week, Paul. And I think it's legitimate to point out he cannot play in the passing game any longer. You can't trust him. He doesn't catch the ball. He's not dynamic enough to get open anymore. You almost have to just mask the fact that when you need to throw the football, he's out of the football game.
They have two fewer red zone passing touchdowns because of him. The one cutting across
in Baltimore
that he admitted he screwed that one up. He should have kept going. He would have waltzed in the end zone. And this one, which was just an egregious drop.
And he dropped another one. So not in the red zone, but he dropped another pass in that game as well. You know, in the drops aside, you know what? If you drop a handful of balls and you catch another 40, I'm going to say okay. Paul's got 8 catches. And this is without Tyler Eifert being around.
Yes.
And this in an offense that is supposed to be tight end friendly. Now, it's certainly more tight end friendly with Tyler Eifert because I think they had a lot of ideas with two tight ends that he was going to be the receiving portion of the program. And Jermaine, honestly, is probably going to be kept in to block a bunch of times, to be quite honest with you. So now he's filling kind of the traditional old school tight end role of point of attack blocker and old school go run a 5-yard out route and
screen. I like tight end screens. Right. Typically, he's pretty good at those.
But you know, when he came into the league, he could get down the seam. You could throw him the ball in traffic. He got separation from people. He can't even get open. And now when he does, he can't catch it. And more and more,
how can you continue throwing?
We've
that
seen some routes, and we did not see any Sunday, but there were a couple in the Tennessee game where it looked like Andy had a chance to throw to Jermaine and just simply said, "Nah." Yeah. I can't go there with his football. So the more that happens, you can't trust him. 8 catches is what he's got. Tyler Eifert's played 8 snaps this entire year and has 3 catches. Think about that.
Yeah. There's no doubt about it.
And there's no fixing this other than schematically saying we've got to go more 3 wide, 2 back sets.
And as soon as Marvin Jones gets back, you'll see that.
I think you will too. Yeah, I think you will too.
You have to. I mean, that is one of the worst drops at the most inopportune times that I can remember seeing. And drops happen, but not in that particular spot.
And it adds to the fact that it's almost like his skills have diminished to the point where I made a joke over the other night. He might be your third best offensive tackle. I mean, he's blocked in a run game pretty well. So I'm going to give him a little bit of credit
there.
But as a receiver, he's a non-factor.
And contract year, not good timing for that. Okay, let's hop on the I don't know how much energy I have for the fans of the bandwagon debate. But let's do this. Here's so for those of you that were just the funny part about this is the second that
I got a lot of reaction to this, so there's a lot of fans.
The moment that bad first quarter happened, I mean, the just people. I have a group of Twitter followers that just are only there to just yell. Anybody that's been on Twitter understands this is pretty much how the whole thing operates,
right,
to be honest.
I was going to say, it's a yelling zone.
I hadn't heard from them or seen them all year, these people, since those first three games.
Like the light switch went on and all of a sudden they all scattered.
It was like their internet had been out. They were living in the backwoods of Kentucky, no offense, and they were living in the backwoods of Kentucky, and the internet had just been screwed up for weeks. And all of a sudden,
Bengals are losing, Fred. Let's get to that there internet.
Get to the Twitters. Go tell Paul Denner Jr. how terrible these guys are. Because it was just these same people coming out talking about how everybody sucks. They've been waiting and hitting their favorite topics, hitting their talking points. Just brutal. So the interesting part about bringing this up about why people now jumping off the Bengals bandwagon after one game. And George Iloka was pretty good on this. So let's bring in George Iloka talking about fans jumping off the bandwagon.
George, I'm sure the Patriots kind of dealt with this last week after they lost big and people kind of piled on. Right. What would you say to the fans, you know, who might be jumping off a bandwagon after just one bad game?
Let them jump off. I mean, if we start winning some more, they'll either jump back on or not. And I'm not worried about the people who jump off, and we don't want those fans anyway. So we just look to the Patriots and how they came out, lost on Monday night on prime time. All their fair weather fans jumped off the bandwagon, and they're probably back on after this when they beat us. So we look to them and see how they came out, and we hope to do the same thing on Sunday and beat the Panthers.
Yeah, whatever. You know?
It's – I understand what he's talking about, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I do. But that's the fickle thing about sports. I mean, let's face it. What were we talking about when we were waiting for New England fans to do on Sunday? We were waiting if New England came out like a flaming train wreck that they how quickly would they turn on them? And it didn't happen. The exact opposite happened. They won them back over again.
Yeah.
So I get where George is coming from. I don't believe in the bandwagon. I believe that fans can react however the hell they want to react. If they don't like your team and they're angry at you, well, shame on you. Don't make them be angry. Don't play that way. I thought Andrew Whitworth's quote was pretty good.
I got it here for you.
Okay.
I was just going to read that off. Andrew Whitworth talking about this exact question. Does he care about fans that are maybe jumping off the bandwagon?
Right.
He said, they didn't come to the games when we were 3-0, so I don't know what I have to say to them. That stuff's just garbage. I'm not worried about the fans or the media or any of that crap. Good for you. Because that's the truth, though.
Yes.
I mean, attendance has been down. He's been having to talk about people not coming to the games, even though they're 3-0.
Right.
So why should anybody care about the fans that aren't on board because they lost one game?
Yeah.
It's almost ridiculous to even be talking about.
Exactly. It just goes back to, it'll be interesting to see what comes of the blackout circumstance this week, because it's going to be a topic all week long, Paul, as you know. And there's many factors. I know you're going to explore that in the paper on Sunday in our game day section, because everybody has an anecdotal story of why they don't go. I mean, everybody gives you a different reason why they don't go, but there's maybe an underlying theme or two that you're going to touch on.
We'll get into that. So a little teaser for you for some of the things that are coming this week. So really excited about that. Of course, many of you may know that Ski and I have had our little fantasy football segment thing that we've been doing here. So
You were so cocky when you had the two running backs and I had none. So full of brim and confidence in yourself, Paul Daner Jr.
I was.
You were such the genius. You kind of subverted me there. You undercut me with that extra running back pick when I really you took advantage of the old guy in that circumstance, thinking, you got no running back to get now, smart guy.
Yeah.
How'd that work out for you, Paul?
I was beaten down fairly handily. That's correct.
We don't. You know, the thing is, we didn't even bother to go back and score this week.
No need to.
Simply because
I had to gain 17 points,
and I scored the only two touchdowns of the game. My guys, my guys.
They're your guys.
Mosinu and AJ Green for right now. Yeah.
So what we'll do is the punishment, which I believe is me having to sing Air Supply
on
this podcast, will happen next week.
Yes.
And we will do that because we had too much to talk about this week, and.
And your voice is still a little tired.
My voice is a little tired. Although because I thought maybe gives me the sexy raspy.
For those who don't know, you are quite the karaoke aficionado, correct?
That's true.
I've never seen you in that circumstance, but I've people have raved about it, so I believe them.
It's remarkable. But I will say this: I'm a performer. I'm not a singer necessarily.
Oh, okay.
I perform for the audience.
You're Johnny Bravo. You're the suit. You're the guy in the suit.
I make the people go home happy.
That's all right.
It doesn't mean that I can sing. I know how to make people happy.
I'm going to guess usually the places that you're singing and the time of night you're singing,
they're fairly happy.
They're fairly happy.
Fairly
already.
Happy. Already. Yeah. But they're not angry with me. That's for sure. So anyway, that will happen next week. We also this week we'll do our redraft.
Redraft.
We're allowed to keep one offensive player and one defensive player.
AJ Green.
Yeah.
Fontez Perfect. Next.
Yeah. I have I've got Giovanni Bernard, so Jeremy Hill hasn't cut into his carries as much
as I think
we've anticipated. So I'm pretty sure that
and that's an interesting thing that we'll broach maybe next week because I'm still a little surprised at that.
Yeah, he didn't get. I think the situation didn't.
It did not. He had two carries for a yard, and he did show up in the passing game though.
Yeah, they got him throwing the ball a little bit more, and he played fairly well there. But,
and Gio ran the ball actually to his credit. He ran the ball fairly well.
He kind of.
I thought that was his best pure game running the ball this season.
Yeah, they finally found some space for him. So we'll get into all that next week.
I will not be redrafting Jermaine Gresham, in case you wonder.
He might go undrafted.
Yeah, I'll take Ryan Hewitt before I take him. I have a better chance of something positive happening.
Well, Eifert will not be back by the end of the next segment.
No, he will not. It'll be the segment after.
Correct. So you may have – someone's going to be in a position.
Maybe. Dane Sands about James Wright. Could it be the emergence of James Wright?
The emergence of James Wright is possible. There's no doubt about that. All right, so that'll be next week. Of course, what else we got going? We got a busy home game on Sunday.
Yep.
We'll have all your coverage coming during this week. We'll explore a number of topics and be fun. Be on the Stripes, of course, every Tuesday, 7 o'clock.
Get the Bengals app.
Yeah, I'm done having to tell you about the Bengals app. You know about it. Get it. It's ridiculous.
It's our best app that we have at this newspaper, by the way.
No doubt.
It's easy.
Maybe we're going to have an app off, like Bengals app versus Reds app versus traffic app.
Versus prep app. No, this is the best app.
This is the best one. It's the best one. You can watch the videos. You can listen to the podcasts. You can go through the photo galleries. You can read all the stories. It's all right there. It's so easy to go through. Get our tweetables.
I don't know
what else you could possibly want out of your Bengals coverage, so get the damn app already. All right, so we got to go out. What are we doing this week? What do we got going on this week?
That's a good question.
Carolina's coming to town. We're back home. We're sleepless.
Or, just as a teaser, maybe you can play a little Air Supply going out just so people can understand what you're going to have to sing on
Monday. What's coming next week?
Yeah.
That's not bad. Well, which by the way.
I'm all out of love.
Yeah, I assume that's what you're.
I'm so lost without you.
I assume you're going to. So, all right. So here's a little Air Supply.
I saw them in 1982 at Music Hall, by the way.
Oh, there it is. Our old man moment.
Old man
of the
moment.
Week.
Yep. I just thought I'd break that out for you.
Oh, that's good. You did sneak it in while Air Supply was already here. So congratulations on that. Didn't get to play your old man music. But that's all right. Well, thanks, Air Supply, for showing up. And you'll get to hear me singing this beautiful tune next week, which I'm sure you'll all immediately turn off. So have a good week, and we will we'll talk to you after the Carolina game.
See you.
Life seems so low. It would make me believe what tomorrow could bring when today doesn't really know. Doesn't really know. I'm all out of love. I'm so lost without you. I know you were right, believing for so long. I'm all out of love. What am I without you? I can't be too late to say that I was so wrong. I want you to come back and carry me home, away from these long, lonely nights. I'm reaching for you. Are you feeling it too? Does the feeling seem oh so right? And what would you say if I called on you now and said